Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, February 13, 2018. Two of South Sudan's warring parties clash in Yei River State.
We as a government of Yei River State, we want to appeal and make it very clear here that we are respecting and we are observing the cessation of hostilities. And that's the reason we are unable to order our army, our forces, to intervene into these areas and protect civilians.
And a U.S. Congresswoman says the U.S. arms restriction on South Sudan is mostly symbolic.
And so I think at the end of the day, we have to do whatever we can as an international community and pressure all sides to come to the table, because until you really have an ending of the violence, it's very hard to ask anybody on the international stage to invest in the country.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to Addis Ababa, where the IGAD-led High-Level Revitalization Forum is facing challenges amid a boycott by opposition groups yesterday. The stakeholders to the talks resume negotiations today. Pagana Mum is the leader of the former SPLM detainees who are part of their parties, talking about how to revive the collapsed 2015 peace deal. We now go live to Pagan in Addis Ababa for an update on the talks. Pagan, thanks for speaking to us here on South Sudan in Focus.
You're most welcome, and thank you for having me in South Sudan Focus and your listeners in South Sudan in particular.
Yeah, could you tell us what is happening in Addis Ababa? What happened today?
The parties are engaged in consultations with the facilitators and the mediation, and they are also engaging each other. And tomorrow there will be a meeting that will be organized by South Sudanese themselves, among themselves, and they will be discussing all these issues, and particularly to focus on how to bring peace to our country. That is what is happening. And in addition to the meetings of the committee, the subcommittee on the security arrangement and the permanent ceasefire, which is going on.
There are reports that the parties at the talks are not making any progress. Can you give us a list of the issues that have been agreed upon so far? Pagan, are you there?
Yes, that is made. But, for example, we have discussed and agreed on the principles and declaration of principles. It has been signed by all the parties, with exception of the government delegation, who have reservations on one article, which is Article 28 in the Declaration of Principles. We hope they will overcome that and sign it. And the discussions also continued on Chapter 1, and there has been agreement on a number of areas, like the reform in the judiciary, with the agreement to establish an independent constitutional court. But there are still very serious outstanding issues in Chapter 1 related to the transitional governance arrangement that include the transitional government, the transitional legislature, which are still outstanding. We are expecting the mediation or the facilitation to put forward a proposal based on the discussion that has been made by the parties.
Yes.
The general situation is that The process is going very slow. There is a lot of outstanding issues. Actually, all the main outstanding issues, the issues that keep the country trapped in this cycle of violence, are still not yet overcome.
Yes,
unfortunately,
let's talk about
the environment is also being destroyed by the repeated violation of the cessation of hostilities agreement.
Yes, Pagan, let's talk about individuals who are blocking the road to peace, because the Declaration of Principles stated clearly that individuals who block the road to peace will be punished. Are there individuals who are blocking the road to peace in Addis, and would you name them?
To judge individuals who are blocking the process, but there is the agreement that any individual or groups that block peace must be punished, and this agreement is shared by all the parties, even though the government is having reservations, but they are agreeing that there must be consequences for obstructing the peace process.
All right, Pagan, thank you very much. The line seemed to be not okay. That's Pagan Amoon, leader of the former SPLA detainees, speaking to us from that shaky line in Addis Ababa. U.S. Representative Karen Bass, a Democrat from California, says the move earlier this month by the U.S. State Department to impose unilateral arms restriction on South Sudan was an important move, but it may not be enough. Congresswoman Karen Bass tells Ayen Bure the high-level revitalization forum happening in Addis Ababa should focus on ending hostilities in South Sudan.
What is key to that is being able to have investment, economic development, jobs, education for its population, the basic services that any population needs. And so, you know, this high-level discussion hopefully will contribute to that, hopefully.
What should an alternative plan be in case the talks fail?
Well, at this point in time, it's difficult to say what an alternative plan might be, considering there have been so many talks and so many failures. And so I think at the end of the day, we have to do whatever we can as an international community and pressure all sides to come to the table, because until you really have an ending of the violence, it's very hard to ask anybody on the international stage to invest in the country.
A response by the United States of ongoing fighting in South Sudan is the U.S. restriction that the Department of State imposed on South Sudan. What are your thoughts on the arms restriction to South Sudan?
I think that, frankly, at this point in time, what has to be examined is an international arms embargo. And I know that that has come before the United Nations several times. It's failed. But I do think that there needs to be an examination of that again. And then both Russia and China, who have in the past vetoed the resolution, maybe it's time to reconsider that. Or maybe all of the international forces get together at once, go down to South Sudan and meet with President Kiir. Now, on an individual basis, I certainly know I have personally, many representatives from the United States have spoken to President Kiir, but it might be time for a very high-level, broad delegation from the international community to go down and to say that the fighting must cease.
The arms restriction is largely a symbolic move, as the U.S.
Right.
does not sell weapons to South Sudan. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that was my point in saying that what's most important is that it be international. I realize that it is symbolic, but even the symbolism, I think, sends an important message. I know that the South Sudanese leaders are very upset about it. But until it happens on an international level, it will be just symbolic.
You mentioned a UN-backed arms embargo. What other measures, though, can the U.S. take, or what other options are left for South Sudan?
Well, again, I believe it has to be the international community. I know one thing that I don't want to see happen is for the United States to cut off humanitarian aid. When I was in South Sudan under a year ago, it was when there was a threat of a famine breaking out. I mean, to have a million of your citizens residing in Uganda to have massive refugee camps in northern South Sudan and also right near Juba. I mean, it is a crisis, and I think that it's really going to take an outcry from the international community, but I do not believe that humanitarian aid should be cut off.
You've invested a lot of your time working on South Sudan, even here with members of the diaspora. Just wondering, what is it like for you on a personal level as a lawmaker to see what's going on in South Sudan?
Well, it's extremely sad. I mean, it breaks my heart. The idea that, you know, you have the world's newest nation not able to come together in peace. So it's very sad.
That was Congresswoman Karen Bass, a Democrat from California, speaking to Ayen Deng Bior from her home state of California. Community leaders and witnesses say hundreds of civilians fled their homes in Mukaya County after fighting broke out late last week between SPLA-IO rebels loyal to Riek Machar and forces of the South Sudan National Movement for Change, loyal to former governor of Western Equatoria, Joseph Bangasi Bakasoro. Daniel Martin Friday reports for VOA from Yei Town.
Officials in Mukaya County and witnesses alleged both warring parties burnt down houses and looted civilians' property. Residents who fled Mukaya County in Yei River State are sheltering at a primary school in Hajazira, 2 kilometers northeast of Yei Town. Many of the families who escaped the latest fighting appear tired and weak after walking to Yei Town. Alfred Lasuba is a community leader in Mukaya County. Speaking in his native Pojulu language, he says there was heavy fighting yesterday afternoon in Lorega Boma between the SPLA-IO loyal to Riek Machar and a group loyal to Joseph Bakasoro. We fled here to escape the suffering there. First of all, they searched homes and seriously beat up some of the villagers. They looted a lot of properties from us, including goats. We were forced to stay in the bushes. That's why we thought wise to come into the town. Lasuba claims hundreds of others, especially women and children, remain stranded in the bush without food or water. Grace Roba comes from Mukaya County. She says she and 5 members of her family walked in the bush the entire night before reaching Yei. Speaking in her native Pojulu language, Roba says women are tired of the war.
This fighting is causing us a lot of pain, and yet we civilians have nothing to do with it. Life was better during the 21-year-old war with Khartoum than during this current war. While people are expecting peace, but the armed groups have started fighting again. Peacemakers in our villages are being beaten up. Where is the government that is supposed to be looking after us, the civilians?
Thomas Bidali also fled to Yei Town. Speaking in Pojulu, he says the rebels from both warring parties burned down his house. My home was set on fire and I decided to run. We fled as a group through the bushes yesterday until we reached Yei. The internally displaced persons are appealing to the government and aid agencies to provide emergency food and water. Peter Butli Parajala is the head of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Yei River State. He says his office has registered up to 300 IDPs who fled Mukaya County. Peter is urging humanitarian organizations in the state to extend emergency help to the families displaced by the latest fighting.
According to my record, there are 67 households that are displaced with a total population of 307. Most of these are small children and women, lactating mothers and old people. They are very tired, they are very hungry, they've been working for the whole night without any food. We in RRC, we have tried to give them some kind of hot meals. I have given them 1 bag of rice just to be boiled so that the children can have it. And I have also supported them with the 2 big tents so that the children are able to shelter. And I'm appealing to NGOs, particularly those who have got food in their stores, and then the community also as well, so that they can rush some food to save the lives of these people.
The South Sudanese Development Organization, a non-profit operating in Yei River State, says it is providing some emergency non-food items to the displaced. Why Godwill, who calls himself the spokesperson of the SPLA-IO Machar's faction in Yei River State, confirms his group clashed with the South Sudan National Movement for Change. He claims that Bakasoro's forces attacked his group's positions. South Sudan in Focus could not independently confirm Godwill's accounts.
They attacked our position at the Loreta, but they were being repulsed. As they were being pursued, they were able to set some of the homes ablaze. And as we talk now, a number of houses have been burned in Mukaya. So we strongly condemn this act of cowardice from this anti-peace armed terrorist, and also ask the citizen to investigate.
South Sudan in Focus was unable to reach the South Sudan National Movement for Change for comment. Yei River State Acting Governor Kogo Manasi Levy says government forces will not intervene to stop the fighting.
We as a government of Yei River State, we want to appeal and make it very clear here that we are respecting and we are observing the cessation of hostilities. And that's the reason we are unable to order our army, our forces, to intervene into these areas and protect civilians. But we are so much concerned about the plight of the civilians.
Manasi called on both sides to lay down their weapons and work towards peace. Article 5 of the Cessation of Hostilities Agreement stipulates that the parties shall at all times protect human rights of the civilians and shall ensure the safety and dignity of individuals and communities. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin, reporting from Yei.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, are mosquito nets being used for their intended purposes? Find out when we come back after this break.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do creative and talented youth get encouragement and opportunity in your country?
Yeah, I think if you came out and showed that you're good, then opportunity would avail itself.
Not in my country, and even in the whole of Africa, I think we don't. When you go to a place like Israel, even small children are given the opportunity to put their ideas and thoughts together, but not in Africa or my country.
They hardly get it because everybody is fighting to become someone, and it's only those who are at the top that enjoy that privilege. And the less privileged who are talented and creative, they don't get it.
Yeah, I think so. I've been seeing the effort of the government in improving the lives of youth who are the talent.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. And today, we are talking about the misuse of mosquito nets. Mosquito nets intended to prevent malaria are being used as fishing nets in many countries across Africa, according to a new study. Experts are worried they are draining fish population, but the authors say poverty is the main reason why the practice persists, and efforts to limit mosquito nets fishing may end up hurting people who are just trying to get by. VOA's Steve Baragona has more.
Mosquito nets have been an extremely successful tool against malaria. Health officials have distributed hundreds of millions of them, helping to reduce malaria deaths by 60% this century. They're usually subsidized or given away free. Rebecca Short was working on fisheries management in northern Mozambique as a graduate student at Imperial College London when she saw people fishing with them.
To the naked eye, it did seem to be going on a lot in lots of different places.
Speaking by Skype, she said that's a concern for fisheries managers because the fine mesh of the net catches everything in its path, and it takes almost no skill or capital to start fishing this way. Other development workers have seen mosquito net fishing elsewhere, but it wasn't clear how common it was. So Short and colleagues sent a survey to others working in development around the tropics.
I don't think even we expected to get the result that we did. You know, it was pretty much everywhere where malaria is a risk, there are people fishing with these nets.
Nearly 100 respondents from Senegal to Samoa reported people fishing with mosquito nets. Sometimes it was just a couple people dragging a net through the water. Sometimes it was much bigger.
Where they're sort of blocking off whole river systems with these nets and funneling fish out of the water, and obviously absolutely nothing gets through in those scenarios.
Fishing with mosquito nets is illegal in many places, out of concern for the fishery. But Short says people are doing it because they're poor.
Do you put a mother who's trying to feed her kids in prison for 3 years just for using mosquito net to fish with?
Short says the issue needs a lot more study. Scientists need to know what actual impact mosquito net fishing is having on the fishery. And they may need to find ways to discourage it without making poor people's lives any harder. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
The president of Refugee International says the world is witnessing a refugee crisis. Eric Swartz says the conflict in South Sudan is forcing families to flee to the neighboring countries, straining resources in those countries. Swartz tells VOA's Carol Castile there is a need to end the conflict in South Sudan.
About that objective has become a more serious one, and there have been programs. The World Bank has gotten very involved in some of these programs. And I think that in the midst of all this terrible suffering, in the midst of all that, I think these are some hopeful signs.
Turning briefly to Africa, Eric Swartz, South Sudan in particular, do you know to what extent do the South Sudanese refugees now make up perhaps the largest group of refugees in Africa?
Well, I think they probably do, and I think that that the numbers of displaced refugees as a result of the civil war in South Sudan is, I believe, in the over 2 million, and those numbers are just huge, and they've created significant burdens on neighboring countries in Africa, I think the South Sudanese situation is the clearest example of the dilemma that you described, which is, you can't solve a refugee problem by providing humanitarian assistance. Not that you shouldn't provide humanitarian assistance; you have to. It's critical. But ultimately, that massive exodus of people will be stopped when there is something that looks like a political settlement in South Sudan.
And we're not seeing that on the horizon.
We're not seeing that on the horizon. Well, we're not seeing it. We haven't seen it, is I guess the way I would put it.
And there are reports that the conditions in refugee camps have gotten bad enough that some South Sudanese are actually taking the risk of going back.
That wouldn't surprise me. And I think that, when you have massive outflows in countries that have, limited economic wherewithal, and refugee situations that are not capturing the attention of the international community day in and day out, you're going to have serious challenges in terms of providing adequate resources in those places of refuge.
In Kenya, the government has repeatedly threatened to close Dadaab camp, which is home to hundreds of thousands of Somalis. Is the international community doing anything to keep that from happening?
Yeah, we certainly, Refugees International, we've been very strong advocates against the closure of Dadaab, and governments of the world have also, expressed their concern to the government of Kenya, it's great when communities can feel that they can return to their countries of origin voluntarily. But it's dangerous when return becomes coerced, and threats to close Dadaab, reductions in provisions for refugee camps. Those are measures that create anxiety on the part of refugee populations. And there have been returns from Kenya to Somalia that have been in circumstances that are, I think you can fairly say, have been less than voluntary. And that's not a good thing. It's not a good thing in terms of the principles of the Refugee Convention. It's also not a good thing for Somalia, because you don't want to create a large population of internally displaced Somalians in a situation where there is ongoing conflict and other kinds of risks.
With respect to the EU, the EU seems to have an agreement to halt refugee flow through Libya. Do you know any results from that particular agreement?
It is incumbent upon European governments to take responsibility for returns to a country when they have made arrangements with the government to facilitate or secure those returns. And we're deeply concerned that that conditions in Libya are so abysmal that that these kinds of returns make governments in Europe complicit in terrible abuses of human rights.
That's Eric Schwartz, the president of the advocacy group Refugee International, speaking to VOA's Carol Castile. That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Yala Kitautu by Victoria Ole. Kitautu, yala, kitautu, yala, yala. Kelly ni najere, yala, ni najere, yala, yala. Kelly ni najere, yala, ni najere, yala, yala. Been listening to Victoria Ole with the song Yala Kitautu. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We appreciate you tuning in. Let us know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
أكثر ishirin sena nas mutu ketir dom kufu ketir aulatana abohatana akwanatana
yala yala
umahadu akwad lugo.